You're listening to the Godfather and Gorney podcast on Rivals.com with your host, the Godfather of Recruiting, Mike Farrell.
This podcast is taking a turn.
And National Recruiting Analyst, Adam Gorney.
We once spent a New Year's Eve together in Denny's in San Antonio, and it was really the low point of my life.
That's right. Welcome into another edition of the Godfather and Gorney podcast. My name is Dave Berry, producer of the show, and I am joined, as the announcer said, by National Recruiting Director and the Godfather of Recruiting, Mike Farrell, and National Recruiting Analyst, Adam Gorney. Guys, how you doing today?
Awesome.
There it is.
Yeah, there we go.
That's a little
I like the energy. We're bringing it on a Monday. All right. Well, we're going to talk some NFL Combine and among other things. So, Mike, I'll let you get started. I know you got some thoughts on the Combine so far.
Might as well start with the running backs. I mean, offensive linemen. Do you want to start by Dave Gorney?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk offensive linemen first. That was there was definitely some big up and down ones there, and it looked like the Orlando Brown had a pretty bad day, huh?
Yeah, and that was surprising to me in many ways because remember him as a high school kid. He was a fat kid and just wasn't very put together, didn't have, you know, any conditioning about him, and that's why he was a three-star. He had talent and bloodlines, but we couldn't do anything more than a three-star for him because we just didn't know what type of body type he was going to be at the next level. And then he sort of seemed to put himself together. Obviously, was a first-team All Big 12. I think he was a first-team All-American in some people's books, and I expected him to go to the combine and do okay. I didn't think he'd be a combine freak, but he ran a 5.85, which is really, really, really bad. You know, so when you look at his numbers, he had 14 bench press reps, which is less than a lot of running backs and wide receivers. His vertical was less than you and me. Just really bad showing, and I think it's dropping him right out of round one.
Yeah, it's interesting because they talk about his length, and that's going to be you know, what intrigues teams, and that, you know, on game day, he's a kid that has done really, really well, and that's going to intrigue NFL teams. But just the way he ran, it looked like he almost didn't even prepare for the combine that much. 14 bench reps is hard to believe for an offensive tackle of his size. I understand he has long arms, but God, so do some other people. It looked like he didn't really even... my concern, if I'm an NFL GM, is how serious did he take the combine, and how serious did he train for it? Because he didn't look like he was in great shape. If you're going to run you run the 40 to prepare for the combine. If you're going to run in the 5.8s, which is something like Rich Eisen does, he could probably run faster. You just don't run it. You know, you just don't do that on national television. So, I don't know how much thought he put into which ones he was going to do. It could plummet him. I still think he's a very good offensive tackle, but my question would not be exactly the numbers. It's the preparation he put in for such a big event.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about guys that help themselves, I think Quentin Nelson, you know, obviously he didn't need to help himself. He's the number one offensive lineman on the board for most people, but he had a very good combine. Braden Smith, I think, helped himself as well. We knew he'd be a very good athlete. Remember him in high school. He was a freaky athletic kid. You know, he's from the Midwest, so a lot of questions about quality of competition and all that. But at Auburn, he was sort of up and down, but I thought he had a very good combine as well. And, you know, it's going to be interesting because what's the number you look at for offensive linemen? I mean, it's kind of difficult. I look a lot at your vertical. And I know that sounds stupid, because why would an offensive lineman need to jump? But it shows explosion. Lower body explosion, you know. And so Connor Williams, I think, helped himself a little bit as well. He ran just over a 5 flat in the 40. He led everybody in the vertical. And, you know, I think he might have pushed himself close to round one as well. So the offensive lineman group, to me, wasn't very, wasn't a great group overall. No. So I don't think there's going to be too many guys that land in round one, but you know, there's such a need for offensive linemen that, you know, there's going to be a couple reaches here and there. Will Hernandez doing 37 reps helped himself a little bit, but I'm not sure if he's a first-round talent. So I would say Quentin Nelson is the guy. McGlinchey is interesting. I'm not really sure. You know, you talk about a long-arm guy who I didn't expect to do a lot in the bench, but I don't know. I think someone's going to reach on him late in the first round. And some of these other guys, you know, we'll have to see if somebody falls in love with them based on their combine. But it was not an exciting group to watch. And it's usually not, but I thought it was less exciting this year.
Yeah, we'll see how much the combine matters in terms of evaluations. You know, because McGlinchey does have problems with speed to the outside, obviously. Quentin Nelson could be a top five, top ten pick. He's that good. Will Hernandez had a great combine, but like you said, is he a first round talent or is he a combine kid? Colton Miller was impressive athletically, but that kid is not a first round talent. And if any team takes him, they're probably making a mistake. He's a huge kid, but you know, I mean, Josh Rosen had three concussions last year because of him. And the offensive line at UCLA. The kid who I think helped himself a little bit more and continues to climb up the charts is the James Daniels kid from Iowa. He was awesome in drills. I would take an Iowa offensive lineman like a Wisconsin offensive lineman anytime I can get him. But yeah, it was not a sexy group. It wasn't very, you know, it wasn't two big-time offensive tackles going against each other and seeing who which one was better. That first day was kind of boring, and I was really excited, other than the running backs. The offensive line group really didn't thrill me all that much.
Yeah, so getting to the running back group, obviously there's one name that everybody's talking about, and that's Saquon Barkley, so I'll let you talk about him since he's your man, bro.
Yeah, it's interesting. Say-say, as they call him. Say-say. What I liked reading about him at the combine was that he was asking really good and pertinent questions during his interviews. He was asking stuff like, how do I leave a meeting room without offending the people in the room? Should I compete for the starting job from day one, or all those kinds of things? How do I handle that? You know, really mature, interesting questions, and that can push him. And then obviously he's going to test really well. He was awesome on the bench press. He bench pressed, I think, more than only three offensive linemen. That's good because the team he's going to go to probably has a terrible offensive line, so he's going to be taking a lot of hits. But he ran really well. He interviewed really well. Everything that kind of was expected from him, he did and more. It will be interesting, though, if, you know, I put on Twitter, should Cleveland just take him at one? Just take him. Then figure out your quarterback at four later because, you know, the Giants, it doesn't seem like the Giants are going to take a quarterback. They keep talking about Eli Manning having many years left. I don't think that Josh Rosen is the type, you know, that's going to sit for 3 or 4 years behind Eli Manning. It looks now like Sam Darnold will be the number one quarterback, if not Josh Allen. I'm sure Sam Darnold not throwing hurt him this week, but won't hurt him after the pro day when he throws with his own receivers. So take Saquon Barkley at one, then the Giants, let the Giants and the Colts do whatever they're going to do. It looks like the Colts are going to take Chubb. So at worst case scenario, you have your second best quarterback on your board that you can get, and that could be Josh Allen, that could be Josh Rosen, it could be Sam Darnold, it could be even Baker Mayfield if you want to take a shot at four. You could get any one of those guys. But the risk you run if you're Cleveland is if you take a quarterback first, the Giants gobble up Saquon Barkley at two, and then you lose out on him. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. But it looks if I was the Cleveland Browns, I'd take Saquon Barkley number one.
Rumor has it they're looking at taking Saquon Barkley at number one, you know, barring anybody trading up, and then hoping their quarterback is there at four, which is Baker Mayfield. That's the guy they want, apparently. At least that's the rumor. But The big issue with that is someone could trade in at number three and steal your quarterback, you know. Now, again, I think all the quarterbacks, and we'll get to them, you know, because they were the next day. We'll finish up running back here. I think all the quarterbacks that are top-level quarterbacks did pretty well. Yeah. So I think you can even if you miss out on your guy, let's say someone trades up at number three and steals him, I think you could still get a guy that is very good. Or if you don't like him, trade down a little bit and get a quarterback later in the first round or in the second round, because it's a pretty deep quarterback class based on what I saw compared to last year. Last year was not very deep at all. Running back Nyheim Hines really impressed me as well with a 4.38. I think he's going to be one of those you know, sort of scat back guys, going to be utilized a lot in the passing game for whoever drafts him, probably a third rounder.
Might and if you read Rival Views second. Last week, I mentioned him in as a possible mover up, Mike.
Nobody impressed? Reads that. Nobody reads that garbage. The opinion of me and you, nobody reads. Possible mover up, though. That's real good English, too, for a journalist. He's a possible mover up. Kalen Ballage ran the third best time. He's going to be a late round pick, I think, it just because he doesn't have the body of work, and I don't really even know he knows what he's doing. But I think Rashad Penny is another guy that's going to go in the second or third round. He's a very good player. Darius Geis ran a 4.49, then he ran a 4.6. So that's a pretty good discrepancy between his first and his second. I think Sony Michel is the guy that I would take second. I was disappointed in Ronald Jones. What happened to your guy? That's your guy. No, he's from Texas, so he's not really your guy. But 4.65.
Well, you know, he did. He pulled up twice on that run, and it looked like he had a hamstring issue. So I give him, I give him a pass there. I still think that he hurt himself because, you know, okay, you get these guys who have to be at peak physical condition to do every single thing. They stretch for an hour and a half, and then they still pull their hamstring. It's just a concern that, you know, some guys, you know, you're going to be, you know, have pulled muscles. You're going to have all kinds of issues when you're playing on Sundays, every single Sunday. And, you know, if you can't run a 40-yard dash without getting hurt or pulling up or stuff, that is a little bit of a red flag to me. Geis, I thought, was solid. Ballage was fine, but he only did, I think, 15 reps on the bench press. So he looks like a powerful kid, but is he really a powerful kid? It's interesting to know. I thought Ronald Jones kind of did hurt himself in a running back group that is trying to figure out who's 2, 3, 4, 5, you know.
I think it's so, Geis or Michel right now, too. I don't know. Yeah. Because Geis runs hard. Geis runs really hard. Like, you watch him on film, and that's a kid that just will not go down on first contact. And, you know, he did run a better time than I thought he would be, you know, running. So I would take him, too, and then maybe Michel, 3, or flip him, you know, because Michel can catch the ball a little bit better. And but I don't think any of them are first-rounders. I think it's going to be Barkley, and then that's it. So let's move on to Saturday. We're done with the running backs because that's not an exciting group either. Saturday, DJ Chark was the talk of I think, the day. Calvin Ridley obviously didn't hurt himself at all. He's going to be the number one guy taken. There's no doubt about that. In fact, it was funny. They were talking about that he needs to slow himself down a little bit, and that was clear on one route. You know, he ran the route so fast that he actually fell, tripped over a block of air, and just fell and did a little forward somersault. He does everything so fast, it's amazing. And in the gauntlet, his gauntlet was perfect. I mean, he was right on the line every step of the way, didn't drop a pass, so he was awesome. But DJ Chark, another example of an LSU wide receiver who's got freaky skills that no one can get the ball to, former three-star. I don't know if you remember him at all, but 4.34, dominated the vertical and a lot of other positions as well.
Yeah, had an awesome 40-yard dash and looked like he ran it like a track star. Like, it was really clean and nice-looking, broad-jumped well, big vertical jump. It's amazing that they couldn't use him in that offense more, and it's incredible that they didn't get him the ball more. Now, there has been some questions about kind of when the ball is in the air, him seeing it and coming down with it, but he looked phenomenal at the combine. Again, a kid who can test well and look well, doesn't look like a first round player on tape, but he could definitely be moving up. And the other interesting one is Antonio Callaway had a good day, but you know they're
no one's touching him.
I know that's the issue. Off the field problems, all kinds of issues going on. So you know, that's a kid who might intrigue some teams taking a flyer later on, but definitely not. But Mike, there's going to be one wide receiver taken in the first round.
Maybe. I don't know. Chark might have moved himself up into the first round.
Wow.
I really like DJ Moore, and I agree with you on Chark. The ball hits his body every time he catches it. That's the problem. You know, or not every time, but a lot of times. You know, so he's a drop machine waiting to happen. DJ Moore, I thought, really helped himself quite a bit as well for Maryland. He's going to move up probably in that 2-3 range. I don't think Christian Kirk helped himself. He ran a 4.47, which is fine. But everything he did sort of spoke to the fact that he's not that big.
Right.
You know, he really needed to bust out a 4.38 or something like that. So, you know, and then you go down the list, the 40 times are going to kill a lot of people because it wasn't a fast group. I mean, Mike Gesicki, at tight end, ran a 4.54, which was better than most of the wide receivers. I mean, it's the same as James Washington, who I think dropped himself out of the first round. If he was even in there, I don't think he was in there, honestly. And then Cortland Sutton's the other one who I think is pretty good. So, how did your sleeper Deshaun Hamilton do? Speaking of rival views.
No one reads that stuff.
Yeah, that's true. No one does read that stuff. Did he run? I can't even find him.
I don't know. Let me look. I didn't hear anything good, super good or bad about him. So let me see Deshaun Hamilton. I do have to give credit to NFL.com because they do a phenomenal job of putting all these times up. He did not run or bench.
Yeah.
Which,
he's not going to be a sleeper. Braxton Berrios, one of our fellow analysts, man crush, he didn't run either. I don't know if he's got an injury or whatever, but Woody Womack will be very upset with that. But they could be waiting for their pro day. I mean, Alabama's pro day is, what, Wednesday?
Yeah.
And by the way, Roger Goodell this morning just ran the 40-yard dash on the fifth floor in the hallway in a suit and ran a 5.41. So Orlando Brown, you just drop out of the draft.
And not only did he run really slowly, and I don't mean to crush the kid, but just the way his body moved when he ran, it was like he had never run 40 yards in his life, and it's surprising because Oklahoma's offense runs so fast, he has to run up and down the field.
Crush him. Just crush him like a bug. I mean, he lost his dad. You know, why don't you just pile on a little bit more? Make the kid feel bad about himself. You don't care.
I'm sure he feels pretty bad after that performance. I'm fine. Of course,
there is the infamous story at the Army Combine where I'm interviewing 150 kids and I don't know who's who. And
I didn't know if you wanted to bring this up or not.
Well, you got to bring it up. I mean, I might as well bring it up. So, you know, listen, when you're interviewing so many kids and it's a long day. I mean, that Combine registration day when we used to do it at Army
was
just probably the worst day ever. And it was like 10 hours of interviewing kids over and over again. So poor Orlando Brown comes in. And I knew him from the VTO camp we had done in Atlanta and all this other stuff. But, you know, I know his dad was Zeus Brown, who was an offensive lineman in the NFL for many years. And I didn't know he passed, which was very, very bad. So I asked him how his dad was doing, and he said, he did. And I'm like, oh, God, what am I going to do? Like I said, oh, I'm sorry, so what school is he looking at? You know, I just sort of segued right in there. But who was the dude, the Wisconsin running back? I can't remember his name. He was Clay? Was there a Wisconsin running back?
Charles Clay?
No. Running back named Clay. John Clay? Nah. It might have been John Clay. I don't know. Anyways, there was this running back who ended up going to Wisconsin from Wisconsin. Yeah, I think it might have been him. And he was at the Nike camp, and he had this huge tattoo of a woman's face on his, shoulder. You know, and I went up to him, and I go, who's that? He goes, that's my mom. And I said, oh, you know, and this was like a memorial tattoo. It didn't have dates underneath or anything like that. But it was pretty clear that this person had passed to me. Anyways, I said, oh, when did she die? She didn't die. She over there. And he pointed at her. And she waved to me, and I'm like, oh, my God, stop asking stupid questions. So that's
by the way, my
Orlando Brown story.
Breaking news, Denzel Ward runs 4.32 at the Combine.
So did Dante Jackson.
Oh, did he? It's not breaking, not breaking news then?
No. Well, you're West Coast, so, I mean, you haven't been up watching the Combine since 9 a.m. East Coast time. Like, I have, like, a complete loser. But
And so did Perry Nickerson.
Yeah, I think he's from Tulane or something. I don't really know a lot about him, but yeah, three guys are in 4-3-2. There's a lot of sub-4-4s in this defensive back group. It's actually turning out to be a very good defensive back group. So, but they're not done. Obviously, they run till I think 2 o'clock today. Not run, but they do drills till 2 o'clock today. So we can't really talk about them. We can talk about the tight ends before we talk about the quarterbacks real quick. And Gesicki really helped himself quite a bit. It wasn't as athletic a group as it was the year before. But I think there's a couple guys, Andrews and Gesicki, to me, sort of Mark Andrews from Oklahoma, stood out more than anybody else.
I think Hayden Hurst is in that top group probably, but the issue is he's going to be a 26-year-old rookie. So that will be concerning to teams, I think. And if Gesicki and Andrews looked really good, I think, you know, Hurst slides a little bit in favor of them. I've always loved Gesicki, and everyone knows who listens to this podcast, all 10 of you, that Gesicki in the Penn State offense was phenomenal. If it wasn't going to Barkley, it was going to Gesicki. Super athletic kid and really good hands.
Can't block, though. He can't block.
He can't block, and that, you know. And Mark Andrews isn't much of a blocker either, so it's kind of depending on which one you want to go with there. And, you know, I'll take a Big Ten tight end over a Big 12 one any day.
Yeah, that's why, look at you just absolutely spitting on the Big 12. I would take Andrews, honestly. Gesicki's a better athlete. He had a great broad, great vertical, ran a 4.54. Andrews didn't run. You know, originally they popped him off at a 4.57, and then they corrected it to a 4.67 or something like that. But he's a big, big target. He's a little bit bigger than Gesicki. I like Andrews. I think Gesicki will probably go higher. One of these guys will go late first round. His tight end's so important. The guys like Hayden Hurst, who can block. The sleeper for me is Dalton Schultz. He ran a 4.75, which isn't great, but he's an inline blocker. He catches everything. I thought his gauntlet was very good. I like his size and the fact that he can, you know, get downfield a little bit, but also block. And Stanford tight ends usually pan out. So it's a really ugly group, though. I mean, listen to these names. I mean, the kid that really surprised me was Jordan Thomas. He's a monster. The kid from Mississippi State, and his gauntlet was excellent. His hands are 11 inches. Someone could get a steal for him. The problem is it looks like he doesn't really care. So I'm not sure how much he loves football. But then you got the guys like Disley from Washington, who's just a blocker. Izzo from Florida State is just a blocker. Smythe from Notre Dame is just a blocker. It's just not a great group. So we don't have to spend too much time on them. We can move to the quarterbacks. I thought everybody threw well.
Everybody?
Well, except top, Lamar top Jackson. Guys? I mean, Lamar Jackson didn't throw well. I mean, Darnold didn't throw.
Did you think Rosen threw well?
Not for him, but I thought he did well enough.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we expect more of Josh Rosen because we've seen him, you know, obviously from the high school days and how fluid he is and how his footwork is and all that stuff. I thought he threw well enough. I mean, I don't think he had a bad day. I think Lamar Jackson had a bad day. I thought Mayfield had a good day. I thought Rosen had a good day. I thought Josh Allen had the best day of anybody. But again, he really looks great when there's nobody defending, and that's a big problem. I mean, he throws these routes on air, and if the ball goes 80 yards, and it comes out so fast. He's got Dan Marino's release, which is so quick, and he's got an arm like, you know, Jamarcus Russell. So you assume I'm starting to buy in on him a little bit more as a first-rounder, not first overall pick, not top 10. But as a guy that's certainly in the 15 to 25 range that I would take.
So I think the way you have to look at Josh Allen is if you're going to take him early, you have to be able to convince yourself that his wide receivers were so bad and he was so good that he was just playing at a different level. And that's why his accuracy was so off. He only completed something in the 50%, 56% range or something like that. That's going to be an issue. So was it that the teams he was playing against when he looked terrible, they were good and his team was so bad? It's the argument that I made that for people that wanted to take Darnold over Rosen. If Rosen played at USC with the receivers that Darnold was throwing to, he would have looked 10 times better and there would have been no conversation. So Was it a similar thing that Allen at Wyoming was so good and everyone around him was so bad because it was Wyoming football that he couldn't look good because he was just so far ahead of everyone else? I'm still not convinced. There are guys who at camps, I see it all the time, guys at camps look really, really good. You move them up the rankings, you get really excited about them and how good they are. Then you see them on Friday night in a game and they fold. They're just those guys. I don't know if Josh Allen is that guy. I have no idea, but he looks awesome in a combine setting, but I can see why
someone would take him though.
You know, yeah. Absolutely.
I can now, you know, I mean, obviously watching him against FBS teams, which I did, I think 3 games, he was awful. You know, his decision making was poor. Even before the whole receiver thing this last year, I mean, 2 years ago, he was awful. So I don't really know, you know, it's one of those things, you know, we do it the same thing in high school. Do you trust the camp or do you trust the film or do you combine them? So
yeah,
his film against FBS players, caliber players is not good. His camp stuff is very, very good. And he looked impressive. So I could see if I'm an NFL guy, how I might want to take him. I could see how some NFL guys are saying, hey, this is the next Ben Roethlisberger. Boom, right here. And I could see how other guys are saying, hey, this is the next Ryan Mallett or, you know, whatever. So he's an interesting one, but he certainly helped himself. I don't think anybody hurt themselves except Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson fell out. And then did you see the whiteboard chalk talk with Mariucci and Mason Rudolph?
I didn't. I was at a combine of my own, Mike. It was the Rivals Combine Series or whatever we call it.
Did you? Yeah. Well, anyways, it was replayed a billion times, and it was very, very impressive. Mooch was going over a play that he had when he was with the 49ers, you know, with Terrell Owens and Jerry Rice and blah, blah, blah. And he told him the play, showed him the play on the whiteboard. Then they talked about some other stuff for about 5 minutes. And then he flipped the whiteboard over and he goes, all right, give me the play. And he made him name the play. The play had 4 different names to it. And he had to go through everything, you know, exactly what T.O. was doing, exactly what the tight end was doing, exactly what the 2 options that Jerry Rice had, which were, you know, in front of the safety, if it's a too high safety or, you know, it was pretty amazing. And he regurgitated it exactly. And I think, you know, most of these guys can do that. And to me, that is absolutely amazing. And they cut to DeMarcus Ware, who I like a lot, not as an announcer. I like him because he played for the Cowboys and I'm a Cowboy fan. And Terrell Davis. And they were just both shaking their head like, that's the quarterback that I want. That's the type of quarterback that I want who could just regurgitate that information that you just learned 2 seconds earlier. And the reason I mentioned DeMarcus Ware is that he talked about the quarterbacks and how much he loved Josh Rosen, and that was his guy at the Senior Bowl, which was like, oops. he started arguing with the girl that he was at the Senior Bowl, and the girl was like, the host of the show was like, no, he wasn't at the Senior Bowl. He came out early. He's like, no, he was my guy at the Senior Bowl. I loved him, the Senior Bowl. And she finally had to just sort of say, no, he wasn't at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
It was very, very embarrassing. I think he's new to the NFL Network.
Yeah.
And, I don't think he's going to last that long. But he loves Rosen based on his Senior Bowl.
Rudolph's an interesting one, though, Mike, because I watched a lot of Oklahoma State games this past year. I'd say maybe almost all of them. And at times he looks awesome, and at times it looks like he has a noodle arm. And so he had a ton of, you know, he put up big numbers because he had James Washington and Marcel Aitman and Stoner Kid and 50 wide receivers on that team. The kid that transferred from LSU, Travis Rudolph.
Well, what's his name? How do we forget these? He's a 5-star kid.
Tyron Johnson.
And he went to 2 of our camps.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember anything.
And he looked awesome at times, and then at times it looked like he couldn't throw the ball all that well. So, you know, I like the chalk talk stuff as much as anybody. I think it's interesting, but I don't think he cracks that top 5 or 6 quarterback list.
I think Dave Barry's being attacked by a
rabid dog,
a wolf or something.
But
I think he's fifth. I think he moved ahead of Lamar Jackson. So who's your five?
I was just going to ask, does this bring up the conversation again that Lamar Jackson will not be a quarterback in the NFL?
No, I think he'll be a quarterback. He's just not a first-round quarterback. He's just not a first-round quarterback. It's okay to be a second or third or fourth-round quarterback.
Yeah, most of those guys are the ones who are starters in the NFL now.
Yeah, no, he's a quarterback. I don't think he can play another position. I don't think there's nothing that's shown a skill set. You know, he's evasive, yeah, with the football in his hands, but that doesn't mean he's going to be a catch-and-run wide receiver. He could get killed.
Right.
So, you know, I think he'll be a second rounder, but he was not good. He was erratic. He threw the ball all over the place. It wasn't as bad as Kaiser last year, but it wasn't pretty. Kaiser was just horrible, and the fact that he got drafted in the second round is a miracle, and the fact that the Browns started him this year was just a biggest joke ever. So, let's move on to Sunday. What's that?
Were you taken aback by Baker Mayfield's brash comments about he's the one that can fix the Cleveland Browns organization? Do you like that, or do you go, whoa, this is going to be a problem?
I like it because, listen, if you get picked by the Browns and you suck, then you got to live with that comment for the rest of your life, and that'll teach you to shut your mouth. And if you do it, you're a hero in Cleveland. So be as brash as you want to. But never, ever, ever beg to be picked by the Cleveland Browns. You know, don't. Because he might. Now, like I said, they could take Barkley 1 and Mayfield 4. You know, and then he's the future there. And he's screwed if he is, because every Browns quarterback stinks. So, I don't know. So, let's get to the edge guys, defensive tackles, linebackers. And we can't really talk about today's guys other than the 40s we mentioned, because they're still going on as we speak here. But Marcus Davenport is awesome.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say. That dude is freaking freaky. He doesn't know what he's doing yet, but my goodness. His testing numbers, his length, just out of this world. 4.58 he ran. He's 6'6", 264. So that's like, his numbers were similar to Clowney's numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's moving closer to, you know, Bradley Chubb when it comes to being taken off the board. Chubb's probably going to go 3 to the Colts, but I think Davenport could go as high as top 7, top 8, maybe even higher than that. He's a freaky dude. And Chubb didn't hurt himself at all with a 4.65 and all his other testing numbers.
Yeah, I thought Chubb had a better day. Yeah, Davenport 6'6", 264. That's amazing that he can move like that and look so good. And it'll be interesting. He'll be climbing up the boards, but Chubb is the man. I've loved Bradley Chubb for a long time, other than what the stuff he was pulling against Clemson, taking the towel and all that stuff. But he measured in 6'4", 269, and put up interesting, you know, really solid numbers, vertical 36. He was awesome too. So he's like the top five pick. That it just seems to me like no one's talking about him, and he's going to be a top five pick. Everyone's talking about quarterback and Barkley and everything else, and Bradley Chubb. I think he's going to probably end up going to the Colts and being phenomenal there. I loved him at NC State. I thought he was Derek Barnett when he was at Tennessee, and Derek Barnett was pretty good for the Eagles. So, you know, I love Chubb, and Davenport definitely helped himself, because he was up and down at the Senior Bowl, and he kind of bounced back at the Combine.
And, you know, nobody's talking about him because I think everybody knows where he's going to go and when he's going to go. You know?
Yeah,
There's really not a lot of, you know, you don't know what the Giants are going to do. You don't know what the Browns are going to do. You kind of know what the Colts are going to do because they need an edge rusher. Now, it would be a surprise if they took Davenport over. I think Davenport's ceiling is higher, but I also think there's a lot more question marks about Davenport, whether he's going to be a great player, and there really aren't any about Chubb. So Chubb is the safer pick there. And I'm going to tell you, this is weird. So I was watching the defensive linemen, and I saw Andrew Brown and Deshaun Hand, two former five stars that were in the same class. I think it was 2014. And
from the same region, Mike's region, the Mid-Atlantic.
Same region. Both of them had very poor careers when it comes to five-star prospects. They were at our VTO camp when they were freshmen. They went to every camp we had, five-star challenges, all this other stuff. Both of them played in the Under Armour game. You know, Hand obviously had a better overall high school career because Brown had a really bad Under Armour week and got exposed. But both have also been talked about having been played out of position.
Yes.
A lot of people think that Hand, you know, should have been made into an outside pass rusher.
Yes.
He was forced inside. Now his body type tells you he has to play inside, but I think he could be a five technique defensive end in a 3-4 set in the NFL. And Brown just never really got a chance. He had to play over on a zero technique at times, and just never got to play that pure 4-3, 3-tech that he should. I think both of these guys are going to be very good pros, and I think it could be that I'm crazy. I think it could be sentimental talk that they used to be five stars, but Hand ran a 4.83 at his size, which is very impressive. 4.83, he's 6'4", he's 297 pounds. So a 4.83 at almost 300 pounds. He had 28 bench reps, which is very impressive. His vertical was 32, his broad was 111, three cone was 7.98. Really, really put up very good numbers. Brown didn't put up as good of numbers, but he's 296. He ran a 5.03, 31 bench reps, which is very good. His vertical was 28, which isn't bad. 7.51 three cone, which was good. Very violent hands, as we remember, and showed that in drills. I think these guys are going to be mid-round picks, but I'm going to write about it in my amazing award-winning three-point stance. I think they're both going to be very good NFL players.
Now, let me ask you this, and this is no rip on Alabama because they produce NFL players all the time and know how to do it. But if Deshaun Hand went to Michigan, do you think he would be a first-round pick? We're talking about him in the same kind of breath as we were Myles Garrett. It just seemed like when he went to Alabama, he just never got in the rhythm there, and it just never happened for him. And I agree. I don't think he's a defensive tackle. He's so athletic. Now he's almost 300 pounds. He's forced into that position almost. I always thought he was a guy that was an edge rusher or a stand-up guy. He was a great kid, very athletic and tough and strong and all those things, but it just never seemed to click for him at Alabama, and it looked like he was the type of kid that it would exactly click for.
I think his downfall, honestly, was engineering. He was a smart kid. He wanted to be an engineer. He chose Alabama for the engineering program. He juggled football and engineering, and if you know anybody who's tried to do that, it's really, really difficult to do. Like, it's almost like trying to be go to medical school and be a football player. It's hard to focus on both of them, and I think that was the downfall. So I think he would have gone to Michigan and focused on engineering as well. They had some great players there, Taco Charlton, Chris Wormley. It's not like he would have been an instant starter there either.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think he would have had a better career at Michigan because there was obviously less guys in his way. But I don't know. You'd think the number one player in the country would go wherever and impact. But I think he just got caught up in the numbers and the focus off the field and engineering really kind of did him in. So we'll see. Maybe he doesn't love football. I don't know. He had a good combine. Someone will take him. He could go as high as the third round. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if someone took him in the third round and said, I'm going to take a shot on this kid. Andrew Brown's a little bit different story. He'll probably go later. But I watched both of those guys, and man, I mean, they both are very impressive physical kids. So I just, maybe I'm holding on to the last hope that we didn't bust out on those, especially since those were my rankings and that was my region. But they did well. I was expecting not to be impressed, and I was very impressed with both of them. So we'll see. I think that wraps up. Jerron Payne did what he's supposed to do. He's going to be awesome.
Vita Vea.
Vita Vea, 41 reps, but then he pulled a hamstring. He did the whole West Coast thing, pulled a hamstring and missed most of his workout. That's such a West Coast move. It's just ridiculous. Whatever. But he 41 reps, ran a 5.1 or something in that range at 360 pounds or whatever he is.
I know.
You want to talk about a big freak. He's going to be the number one defensive tackle. 6'4", 347, huge hair, 41 bench reps, 5.1 40-yard dash. Didn't do any other testing and barely did any on-field stuff, but he'll be the first one. Deron Payne will be number two, very, very close behind him. And I think that's about accurate. I would take Payne first, but I'm not going to nitpick. I think they'll go within 5 picks of each other.
Speaking of overrated East Coast defensive tackles who we thought were tough but really weren't, and it was all hyped by Mike Farrell, Hand, Andrew Brown, Tim Settle didn't have a good day, Derek Nottie didn't have a good day.
All right, now Tim Settle I never liked. He was not, I'm telling you, he was not highly ranked. I mean, okay, I'm going to pull up Tim Settle.
Rogers. Yeah, where is he?
Okay. And again, by the time Tim Settle came in, class of 2015, Friedman had taken over the ranks.
with your counsel.
With my counsel, teaching him the ways. He was 174 nationally, so that's not crazy. But I didn't like him because he was kind of chubby. The best thing he did was scream, put him in a coffin when Byron Cox
killed him. That was awesome. And so for people that don't know that story.
Who was the other one you were
talking Derek about? Nottie. Derek Nottie.
Well, he's a little undersized. I mean, that's the problem. What did Nottie do? I didn't even see. Did he run?
Let me look.
I don't even see Derek Nottie.
NNADI.
No, I know how to spell it. Oh man, he ran a 5.38. He's the worst of the 40s. 25 bench reps, 27 inch vertical, 96 broad, which is horrible. 8.153 cone, which is awful. He's a pure effort guy. He's just a motor guy. He's not going to test well. He's 6'1". He's sawed off. He's 3.17. He'll be a late round pick. He was ranked pretty highly though.
Oh yeah,
I'll give you that. But you saw him at every freaking event we had. He was awesome.
So what you know, to he say? Wasn't. He actually wasn't ranked that high. He was ranked. He was only a 5.94 star.
That's still in the 120 something.
He was 81, which would
pretty
much calculate him as a third round pick.
Yeah, and that's a 2014, so that's on me.
Yeah.
Sawed off kid, all motor, all energy, tested horribly. So, whatever. Listen, Virginia was a rough one for me. Derek Green was a 5-star. He's bagging groceries someplace. I mean, you know, but Jonathan Allen, I got him right.
I thought that was a Friedman one. I'm not.
No, Jonathan Allen was me. Friedman never laid eyes on. Jonathan Allen, I think, was a 2013 kid, so shut your mouth.
I'm not sold on Andrew Brown because I can never get out of my mind at the one camp, and I don't even know where it was. I think it was a 5-star challenge. He just had no feet. Like, he always fell down. People were hardly touching him. And the same thing happened in college, though. He should have dominated at Virginia.
Cleats. He got bad cleats. He was handed free bad cleats. And he had bad turf. Bad turf to deal with. It was awful. That was in Chicago. That was at
Soldier Field.
Soldier Field, yeah. Bad turf.
I don't know. I think it was grass.
So the story of the linebackers, obviously, is Shaquem Griffin. Now, I am going to say this, and people are going to get upset at me.
Oh, boy.
But people get upset at me all the time. I would not draft him.
And is it, let me ask you, is it solely because of the disability?
Yes, it is. And it's not that I'm a horrible, heartless person, but I'm an NFL executive. I need to make sure that every one of my picks is going to pan out. And there's been no precedent for a one-handed football player. You could say Jason Pierre-Paul after he blew off most of his fingers, but I wouldn't draft him.
It is an interesting.
Amazing.
Yeah.
4.38, freaky. He did 20 bench reps with the prosthetic. Great story, great kid. Everything about him you want to root for. He's a winner. I wouldn't draft him.
It is definitely an interesting topic, and I think before teams draft him, they will talk to a lot of doctors, and they'll make him go through a lot of tackling drills to see exactly how he does this, because tackling at UCF is one thing when you're bringing down guys from Memphis. Tackling guys from the Oakland Raiders is a completely different thing. And so I haven't watched enough tape of UCF football to see exactly how he actually physically tackles people. Because you need your hands. You need your hands as a linebacker. You need them to wrap up and tackle.
He does a very good job. I mean, the left hand is used as a club, so to speak. And you've seen guys with injured hands who have the big cast on there, and they have to play with a club.
Yeah.
He uses his left hand as a club, and he uses his right hand to wrap up. But the thing with it is, after his combine, they were talking about he moved himself up into the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah.
Right? Now, he had probably the best combine of anybody. But I'm saying, if I'm sitting there with a seventh-round pick, and I'm looking at linebackers, I'm not picking them. And you can send all your hate tweets to me at Rivals, Mike, or whatever you want. But I'm just saying, I just wouldn't do it.
And honestly, and I think we have a pretty decent understanding of how NFL executives work, no one will ever publicly say that, but you might see teams, you know, he might fall, you know, out of projections for that very reason. They're not going to say that they're not going to take him, but they just choose to take someone else.
Nope, but I have the guts to say that I wouldn't take him.
What about some other guys, Mike? Down, Arden Key, were you sold on?
Nope. Should have ran, too. Didn't run.
I know. He put out a tweet, and there are obviously questions about him. He had to take time away for personal reasons. He's had surgeries, all kinds of issues.
I mean, I draft him, but he's not a first rounder, if that's the question.
Yeah, and he said that he doesn't have to go to the combine. The combine has to come to him or something like that. Which fuels questions about him. So you know, that's a guy
I would take first is without a doubt Tremaine Edmonds. 19 years
old. Oh, absolutely.
Freak,
oh my God.
Nature.
Freak, yes. Nature. Yes.
That's a kid that I could see sliding up into the top 5, top 10. I mean, just so freaky. Now, I've seen projections as high as number 9, I think, to San Fran or something. I could see him going 5, 6, 7, something like that.
Yeah, and I think that.
So freaky.
Yeah, awesome numbers, big, you know, big time player at Virginia Tech. Obviously coached well by Bud Foster. So you know, that is a kid who I would absolutely take a very, very hard look at.
6'5", 253, 4.54, 117-inch broad jump, 19 bench reps, great field work. I think he passed Roquan Smith as the number one linebacker. Roquan ran better, 4.51, but when you look at the measurables, 6'1", 236, and Roquan didn't do anything else and also wasn't able to work out fully, I think you take Edmonds because of his age and because of his upside. He's just starting to scratch the surface of his potential. And then after that, it's just not a great linebacking group overall. You got some questions.
What do you think of the Boise State kid, that Leighton Van Esch kid?
Yeah. I liked him a lot. I mean, you know, they compared him to Brian Urlacher. That's a little ridiculous. But
yeah,
he's 6'4", 256, ran a 4.65. His broad was 124. His vertical was 40 inches. I mean, the kid's a freak.
Yeah.
I like him a lot. I think he landed himself in the first round as well. I think you'll see probably Edmonds go first, then Roquan, and then Van Der Esch.
That'll be an interesting debate to see if Roquan, because obviously Edmonds has the better numbers and looks more like the NFL linebacker and is younger and all those kinds of things. But Roquan was so incredibly was so incredibly productive at Georgia and put up such awesome numbers every year. That's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to pass on him, you know.
And I think a couple edge guys did really well. Josh Sweat had a very good combine.
Yeah,
he was. I mean, 6'4", 251, 4.53, 40-inch vertical, 124-inch broad. His 20-yard shuttle was 4.28. He put up some numbers. He didn't have a great career at Florida State, but remember, in his high school senior year, he had that injury where we didn't know if he was ever going to play football again.
So, right. Right.
He's a really good story. And then my boy Harold Landry put up numbers.
I was going to bring him up. Yeah, I was going to bring him up.
36-inch vert. Looked good in drills. 4.19 shuttle. I'm not sold on him because he didn't have a great senior year. You know, he sat a lot. There were some durability questions. He got injured. His junior year was amazing, where he led the nation in sacks. I'm not sold on him as a first rounder, but I think he put up first round numbers, and I think someone's going to take him in the first round. So keep an eye out for him. And then the D-backs, obviously, today we got Dante Jackson, Perry Nickerson, Denzel Ward, all ran 4.32s. Tony Brown, who can't cover anybody, ran a 4.35 out of Alabama. These are unofficial times. Anthony Averett ran a 4.36. Jair Alexander ran a 4.38. He's another guy who's just injury prone, so I worry about him.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm looking for some names like Josh Jackson ran a 4.49, which isn't great, but not bad for him. Holton Hill ran a 4.5. He's got some off-field issues. Isaiah Oliver ran a 4.51. He's probably a first-rounder. Carlton Davis, 4.53. Mike Hughes, 4.53. No bad times here. I mean, everybody really ran well. Tavares McFadden did not run well, but we knew that. He's 204 pounds, and he ran a 4.67. So remember when he had 9 picks and everybody projected him as a first-rounder? That's not happening.
No, I don't think that's
happened. What do you think happened to Dave Barry?
If you check your text messages, I think you'll find out. There's been some inter-office communication.
He didn't text me.
Oh.
He doesn't like me.
No, I used the wrong one. I'm here.
What happened, Dave?
We'll talk off the air.
No, I want to know.
Yeah, I had to take care of a home issue.
Is it a home issue or is it a rivals issue?
No, just a home issue.
Oh, all right.
But we're good now.
Would you draft Shaquem Griffin?
Yeah, I would. I think I did hear everything you guys said, and you know the guy's a gamer. You got to give him a chance, Mike.
I don't know.
I'm kidding. I'm right there with you, but I just didn't want to say it publicly.
I know you didn't. Gorney, you never answered. Would you draft him?
Yeah, I would. If he can tackle just as well as anyone else, I don't think it's an issue.
And what about ball skills?
He'll get a chance. If he doesn't get drafted.
Oh no, he'll get drafted. There's no doubt he's getting drafted. I mean, I'm in the minority here. He'll get drafted. He'll be a 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th round or whatever. There's no doubt he's going to get drafted. I'm just saying, I wouldn't do it. So I don't know. Maybe I'm the bad guy.
No, it's not being the bad guy, and it's a fair question. It's just, is he more athletic, and can he hit, and can he wrap up and tackle? He could do all those things, so I don't see it as being a problem. But I do get your point, and I do think NFL executives will be like, good story, good combine story, I'll take Malik Jefferson, you know?
Yeah, or, you know, a lot of other guys. I mean, the linebacker group wasn't sexy, but there were a lot of guys that are in that 4th to 7th round range that did well. So I don't know. It's just one of those things. All right. I think we could just talk about the combine today. I don't think there's anything else to talk about. It's starting to become commitment season, though. You saw a lot of commitments this week and this weekend because junior days and stuff like that. So we're going to be able to talk about a lot more than just the NFL combine coming up. How was your weekend? How was your camp?
It was so fun, Mike. The combine was Saturday, and we got there at 8 a.m. It rained from about 9:30 till 11. Mm-hmm. So then we stayed until about 4, invited 16 kids, I think, to the camp the next day. Camp was good.
Gosh.
It was sunny. It was very good and pleasant. And I liked the structure of the camp. I you know, we did the cat and mouse drill, and the guys got after it. It was very good. Justin Flo, baby man from Upland, California, will be at the NFL Combine one day and will be a first-round draft pick. That's my prediction. He's phenomenal. Everybody was talking about him yesterday like they talked about Amon-Ra St. Brown 2 years ago. They were just amazed at how dominant he was, and everybody is just captivated by how good he was. Chris Steele was very good. Kayvon Thibodeau was a no-show, which is continues to be a concern. You know, it was a good camp. I like the time of the camp. It starts promptly at 10 o'clock. It ends promptly at about 1:15 or so, And so you're on the field, you're competing, and then you get to go home.
What happened to Brew?
I don't know. His dad signed him up. He was all ready to go. Everything was fine. And then on Sunday morning, our camp invite guy Brian Moore got an email saying that Brew wasn't showing up. I don't know if he was up in Northern California. I know Stanford had a junior day, and Cal had a junior day. I don't know if he was doing that or what. But to get to the 5-star challenge, you have to compete at a regional rivals camp. So,
Get him to go to Northern California this weekend.
I've put effort in, and I'm done putting effort in for that.
And I'm sure all the 7-on-7 coaches were very, very happy with everything.
Everything went well. The 7-on-7 coaches weren't the issue. Armand Hawkins was very happy.
Nobody cornered anybody and threatened to kill them, like when I was out there. And
when Big Al tried to take you down?
With his cronies.
Oh, no. I've developed those relationships, and everything was good. There was a little disagreement about the defensive back MVP, but everything worked out well. Everyone seemed to be pretty happy.
So your boss didn't turn to you and point at you when the big people were like angry and say, "That's the guy you need to go beat up."
Is a great story that we should tell. A select group of people at the LA camp about 5, maybe 6 years ago did not like who was named MVP, and a former executive at the company we work for turned and pointed at Mike Farrell for his people to have a discussion with, and
pretty much said, "That's the guy you want to go beat up." Great.
It was awesome.
Luckily, I could outrun all of those guys, and which is sad because I can't outrun anybody. But this was a plodding large group of men coming at me very, very slowly, so I could handle myself. Had they been any sort of athletes, I would have been dead.
Yeah, you would have been in trouble.
So this is our combine version of Godfather and Gorney. I'm sure we'll get 20 people to listen to this and move on to the next week. Awesome. I guess we can kill it, Dave, if your home emergency is all set.
On that positive note, let's get out of here. Let's remind everybody, follow us on Twitter, @AdamGorney, @RivalsMike, and @RealDaveBerry. We will see you guys again next week.